And welcome to episode 103. This is the Sound Off on SCScoops.com. It is Saturday, March 13, 2010. Thank you so much for downloading the latest edition of the Sound Off on what is, here in New York anyway, a just ridiculous day. I don't know if you can hear it. I hope not. But there is an ungodly bad rainstorm outside right now that I just hear glass breaking every 10 seconds. You would think Steve Austin is about to walk out. Just things flying all over the place. I had a supermarket shopping cart literally overturn itself. It flipped over in the parking lot, hit me right in the leg. Not a good day right now, so hopefully the power doesn't go out. My lights keep flickering, but I am working on a brand new laptop, and I thought, let me unplug it from the power source, so should be good to go even if the power goes off here, but we'll see what happens. It's just really bad outside right now, but got a lot of ground to cover. This is the first Sound Off coming off the heels of the supposed new Monday Night War, the debut of Raw vs. Impact for good. This is going to be your battle every single Monday night. This is not a one-off thing, although judging by the ratings that came in on Tuesday afternoon, who's to say how much longer Impact will be going on Monday nights? A big disappointment, I think, if you are a TNA worker, office member, fan, although I would say the fans really probably don't care much about ratings and more so about the on-air product, but not a great showing for TNA as far as their first Impact head-to-head with Raw. But the way we'll work this here, I'm not going to give a breakdown of every single segment on both shows. I know a lot of you have been emailing me your thoughts on the show, wanting to compare your thoughts to mine. So let me start with Impact. I'm going to give you the things about Impact that I liked. I'll be positive, and then we'll get into the stuff that wasn't so good. Right off the bat, the first thing I have to say is that the crowd, at least at the beginning of the show on Monday night at the Impact Zone, seemed really, really hot. I know that when The Undertaker was making his way down to the ring, I decided to flip over to TNA because, again, I don't have DVR, so I'm flipping back and forth the way I would have, you know, during the original Monday Night Wars 12 years ago. And what I see is Hulk Hogan in the middle of the ring with Abyss cutting a promo, and the crowd is going nuts. I mean, the crowd is going apeshit for the two of them, and it really feels like a high-energy program. It feels like something big's going on Impact, and that's a good thing. What followed that, of course, was not so good. We'll get to that in a second. The other thing that struck me early on in the show, and this was after the first segment concluded, when Hogan and Abyss were beaten down and they went backstage with JB interviewing Ric Flair and AJ Styles, I loved the format of that interview. Loved it. It reminded me of an old-school NWA or WWF backstage interview that Gene Okerlund would be conducting. You know, you had your static camera fixed right on the wrestlers. They were looking directly into the camera. And, of course, having Ric Flair, who actually was around 20 years ago in the NWA and WWF, cutting those same exact promos, maybe that had a little something to do with why it felt so old school. I'm not a big fan of the way WWE goes backstage with Josh Matthews. The camera pans over to the person standing next to him, and it's you know, you could tell it's just some moron holding a camera going right up in their face, and the wrestler never even looks in the camera. I mean, John Cena does every now and then, but So I actually like that, and that's a minor thing. It's not exactly, you know, the end-all, be-all. This is why TNA will fail or succeed. It's just a little something about it that I really liked, and I said to myself, I wish WWE would do interviews more like that. Rob Van Dam, no big surprise, made his debut on Monday night. A very quick win. Almost a fluky win, you might say, over Sting. But again, when RVD came out, the place went nuts. They knew he was coming out. They were chanting RVD even before the letters appeared on the big screen. And it was good to see RVD back on TV and getting that sort of adulation from the crowd. You know, sometimes guys will come back and fans will sit on their hands. Rob Van Dam has always had a fan following. WWE for years has been trying to get him to come back. He's done a shot with them here and there. But at the end of the day, Rob decided TNA was a better fit. And it was good to see him back on TV. The end of the show, of course, we did see Jeff Hardy run out to the ring. Got another big response from the crowd. So, you know, one thing that TNA has going for it is you can't say they have a lack of star power. You know, there were people years ago that would argue that TNA was no good or TNA would not be able to get a foothold because they had guys as talented as they were, like Samoa Joe, like AJ Styles, like Christopher Daniels, like Abyss, very talented performers, but they had no name value. They had no name recognition that the average viewer would care about. Can't say that anymore. Can't say that anymore. You've had Eric Bischoff is in every single segment, which is not a good thing. As great a performer as he is, it's a little bit of overkill when he's in every single segment each week. But you've got Hulk Hogan, who they've just been clamoring for years. To them, Hulk Hogan was the brass ring. He was the Holy Grail. If we get Hulk Hogan, he'll turn our fortunes around. Of course, that hasn't proven to be true, but they have Hogan. They've got Sting, who also made his comeback on Monday night. They've got Rob Van Dam. They've got Jeff Hardy, at least for a few more weeks, and if he goes to jail. Kurt Angle, and they've got a lot of talented performers to kind of blend in with those guys, like Desmond Wolfe and The Pope and AJ Styles and Abyss, and so on and so forth. I would throw Mick Foley in there. Obviously, Foley is a big name, but they've treated him like garbage to the point where I don't think Foley means anything anymore. It's unfortunate, but the fact is TNA has a lot of people under contract and a lot of big names. Now, let's switch gears here and get to the negative. Actually, I have one more positive to mention. That X Division match, which took place, I believe, in the first hour of Impact, I believe it was Daniels, Kazarian, and Doug Williams, was probably the best match of the night on either show. It was a really good match, so I'll lump that in there as a positive as well. Now, let's talk about some of the stuff that wasn't so great about Impact. My God, this wind. This wind is unbelievable. It's ruining my concentration. Now, I mentioned all the big stars TNA has under contract. Let's talk about the negative of it. In spite of all of those names that I just mentioned, and there's probably a couple I'm even forgetting. They've got Kevin Nash, they've got Scott Hall and Sean Waltman, who were big names years ago. In spite of all of that, when the ratings came in on Tuesday, it really should not have been a shock to anybody, but it was a shock apparently to the people in TNA, or so I hear. So has been written that people backstage at TNA were moping around. They were very depressed when the numbers came in. And may as well bring up the ratings right now. Obviously, WWE trounced TNA. Nobody expected TNA would win, but they did not do as well as they did on January 4th. Raw was actually down this week themselves. They clocked in with a 3.4. It was actually a 3.38, rounded up to a 3.4, which I believe was down from either a 3.6 or a 3.7 the week before. Anyway, it's just over 5 million viewers. Impact came in with its lowest rating of 2010 at an 0.98, rounded up to a 1.0 rating. That's not good. That is not good at all. And I mentioned this on my Twitter page, not that I'm tooting my own horn or anything, but I did give a prediction on the show 2 weeks ago and again last week, and I predicted that TNA would do a 0.9. And I was within one-tenth of a ratings point. Technically, you could say they did a 0.9, although it was rounded up to a 1, but I, for one, was not surprised. That's why I predicted a 0.9 rating, and I did so for a couple of different reasons. The main reason of which is that I thought going directly head-to-head with Raw from 9 to 11 was a mistake. I said this before, go back and listen, that when they got that number, that very impressive number on January 4th, a lot of that, if not most of that, was because that first hour, unopposed, from 8 to 9 p.m. when Jeff Hardy first made his appearance and Ric Flair first made his appearance, that's the hour that really did big numbers for TNA. They went down after that, but when you got the cumulative rating of all 3 hours, they clocked it at a 1.4, I believe, and everybody was happy about that. And you would think that they would learn a lesson from that, and they would say, you know what, let's do what we used to do back in the day. Nitro used to go on the air at 8 o'clock. They had that edge over Raw. They had an hour unopposed. Of course, as the years went on, Nitro went to 3 hours, and Raw began dominating. But the point is, it goes back to when Dixie Carter had that press conference, and Hulk Hogan, they had that big press conference to formally announce Monday nights many weeks ago. You may recall I even played a clip on the Sound Off mocking Dixie Carter because she was talking about Hulk Hogan calling him Rocket Fuel and all that stuff. And I was just teasing and having fun, but it was during that press conference she was asked a question by one of, I think, two members of media that actually showed up. And she was pressed on this issue of 9 to 11 as opposed to 8 to 10, and Dixie Carter herself, unless she doesn't know what the fuck she's talking about, said herself in her own words, Spike gave them the option of going 9 to 11 or 8 to 10, and they chose to go from 9 to 11 because they wanted to take it head to head to WWE and Vince McMahon. She didn't say that last part, but that's basically what she meant. So basically, they were given the option of having that first hour unopposed, and they chose not to take it. Now, chances are, had they done that, USA Network would have leaned on Vince McMahon and WWE and said, look, you're going 3 hours permanently. And that would have been good for nobody. That would have been good for nobody. There's already enough wrestling on TV, and wrestling is not nearly as popular as it was 12 years ago anyway. The last thing we need is 5 hours of wrestling on Monday nights. It's just too much. Raw has really found itself. It's really hit its stride in recent weeks on the road to WrestleMania, but the fact is, Raw is very hit or miss. There have been plenty of shit, just dog shit Raw shows in recent months, and many good ones as well. Raw does not need to go 3 hours. And had Impact gone from 8 to 10, there's a pretty good chance USA would have said, you're going 3 hours whether you like it or not. Because they've been trying to convince Vince McMahon to do it for years, and he's resisted. But in spite, you know, even so, if I'm TNA, and I look at this as a war and a competition, I say to myself, good. First of all, it's good for two reasons if I'm TNA. Number one, 8 to 10 just makes more sense. We'll have that first hour unopposed, at least until USA decides that Raw is going to go 3 hours, whatever date that may be. They'll at least have a couple of weeks with that first hour unopposed. Maybe they can build an audience that way. And you know what? If USA Network tells WWE you're going 3 hours, which is a mistake, and that was one of the things that sped up the demise of Nitro in WCW. If I'm TNA, from a me against them perspective, I say good. If that's going to be the death of WWE, so be it. But I don't understand the logic if they were given the option to do it, because you have a show in WWE Raw. They're on the road to WrestleMania, their biggest show of the year, maybe one of the biggest WrestleManias of all time, business-wise. This show has been built up just not flawlessly, but it's excellently built up. A lot of people very interested to see what's going to happen with Vince McMahon and Bret Hart, Shawn Michaels and The Undertaker, John Cena and Batista. Everything is just coming together and clicking at one time for WWE, and TNA decides we're just going to go head-to-head with them at 9 o'clock, and people are going to put Spike on instead of USA because we've got Hulk Hogan and Ric Flair. Uh-uh. Doesn't work that way. In fact, later on in the show when Hogan and Flair came back out for their tag match when it was restarted, the beginning of that segment, I think, drew something like an 0.76. Now, the overrun got about a 1.0... maybe a 1.01. But again, the overrun is always skewed for Raw and Impact because you have to imagine there's some people tuning in for whatever the TV show is that's coming on next. 0.76 for the beginning of that segment, which included the backstage stuff where Brooke Hogan and Bubba the Love Sponge were basically saying, Hulk, don't do it, don't do it, don't go out there, you're going to die. And Hulk Hogan didn't deny this. Hulk Hogan even said, look, I know I shouldn't be going out there. I'm old, I'm crippled, I'm broken down. But I've got to do it. TNA can't survive without me. By the way, how pathetic is that? But anyway. Just really, really bad stuff. I don't know why you would build Hulk Hogan up that way. Anybody that looks at Hulk, and this has been the case for the last decade plus, but, you know, you look at Hulk Hogan, he's an older man. We know this. And he can barely move. We know this. Why would you want to draw attention to that? Why, for the last... at least the last 2 weeks, if not longer, on Impact, would you want to script or plan these segments where Hulk Hogan is going to talk about how old and decrepit he is? Bubba the Love Sponge is going to pray that Hogan doesn't wrestle because he may drop dead. Why would you do this? And why would that make you or I say, you know what? WWE's got whatever they've got going on USA right now on Raw, but shit, man, Hulk Hogan, who's old and crippled and can barely move, is on the other channel. I want to watch that instead. And quite clearly, there were not too many people out there who said that, based on the numbers. So, you know, I don't quite know what to say. I just they've got the same people writing their TV show that they did before Hogan and Bischoff came in. I don't know why Vince Russo is still employed. I can't explain it. I don't have an answer for you. The only thing I can think of is he must have naked pictures of somebody somewhere. I don't have any other explanation for it. My only hope, maybe, And I very rarely, if ever, will hope that somebody loses their job or anything like that, but I'll make an exception here. My only hope, the one good thing that maybe will come from this, and it's not going to, but maybe, is that if Impact does not improve in the next couple of weeks, and you've got to find a scapegoat for the bad numbers, maybe that will finally light a fire under their ass, and they'll, and you know, Dixie and Bischoff and Hogan, they'll think to themselves, we've got to make a change here, and we've got to make a change in the writing and the creative aspect of the show, and get him the hell out of there, and just bring somebody else in. Bring in a committee. Not the committees work so well. Anything is better than Vince Russo at this point. He is a poison to that company. He is a cancer. And the cancer will spread. It will only get worse. I mean, it's like if you were diagnosed with cancer, God forbid, I know people, family members, diagnosed with cancer. I'm very familiar with the disease. It is an insidious disease, okay? It's like a parasite. And if you are told by your doctor, unfortunately, you've been diagnosed with cancer, the first order of business is to figure out what steps you need to take to cure yourself and rid yourself of the cancer to give yourself the best chance of survival, right? Any rational, smart, intelligent human being with half a brain would do that and would think that. What TNA has done, if you look at TNA as a person, this person has decided they're either in a state of denial, they don't believe anything is wrong, they think they're completely healthy and there's nothing wrong at all, or they've decided, fuck it, I'm going to die anyway, so I'm just going to keep doing what I've been doing, and I'm not going to make a change. And eventually what's going to happen is exactly what you would think is going to happen. And at some point, TNA won't be around anymore. I don't know if it'll be months. I don't know if it'll be years. I don't know how they've already had 8 years, so my hat's off to them. But I've said it before. I want to see TNA do well. You know, I want to get excited about Monday nights again. And I don't know. This past Monday was not quite as exciting as January 4th. And I just feel like if they don't make a change and do something different, I could see Spike TV moving them back to Thursdays. Maybe that's what has to happen. I said before, moving to Mondays was a good move. Because the worst thing that happens is if you fall flat on your face and fail, you'll just go back to where you were before. You'll be embarrassed. You'll have egg on your face. But it doesn't have to be that way. It's a problem with creative. These shows are not good. The talent is there. Their roster may be richer than WWE's. All the big names they have sprinkled in with the younger guys. There's no reason for this company to be doing as badly as they are. And even on nights when they do well, they could be doing so much better. I didn't think Impact was a great show on Monday. I thought it had more energy. It felt, there was something about it that gave it this feeling of there's more going on. And there was. Sting came back and turned heel for reasons that escape me. No fucking clue why you would turn Sting heel when his last heel turn failed so miserably. Although I will say this. I was watching the Sting RVD segment, which is the next thing I want to harp on here. And Sting came off as a real badass to me here. Granted, he was using a baseball bat. Anybody can be tough with a baseball bat. So Sting actually came off looking really cool, I thought. I don't think this heel turn's going to work. In fact, I know it's not. No matter how hard they try. Most of the fans were already cheering Sting. And their treatment of RVD is just inexcusable. You know, here's a guy who came out, got a tremendous response from the crowd. Clearly he was beloved by the people there. He proceeded to kick Sting in the face and pin him in 15 seconds. And then Sting proceeds to beat him down with a baseball bat. Now, what happened, of course, is eventually Hulk Hogan came out, and Sting hit him with a bat, which we already saw earlier in the show. So why you had to have Hogan come out to repeat the exact same thing we saw earlier, I have no idea, but whatever. But in between all of this, it took so long for Hulk Hogan to come out that RVD was literally beaten with a baseball bat for about 10 minutes straight by Sting. I mean, this fucking segment went on forever. Forever. It just would not end. Rob Van Dam kept getting up. He kept getting beaten down. Sting would leave. He would come back. He would hit him again. RVD would go down. He would get back up. And I thought to myself, where is this leading to? What's going on here? Now, I heard after the show, the supposed rumor is that what happened is Hulk Hogan was in an adjacent building filming those wonderful pre-tapes that we saw later on of him backstage all bloodied, talking about how he was going to wrestle and all that. They pre-tape all those segments. Hogan was late in coming back, he couldn't. Obviously, he can barely move. It took him a lot longer than they thought to get back out into the impact zone. And if that's true, and I don't know that it is, they could just be saying that because they realized after the fact how fucking stupid that segment was. But even if it's true, it's still their own fault. You know, you have people in the company that are supposed to pace the show, and they should think of these things in advance. So I don't care what their reasoning was. We saw what we saw. RVD looked like a fucking jobber after that match was over, and nobody gave a shit. I mean, they didn't even mention him again for the rest of the show. That's how big of a star he came off as. So I don't know what to make of it. You know, you think Rob Van Dam, a guy like that, could really be a big deal in TNA, and maybe he will be. I would like to think that he would not have signed a contract with them unless he knew where they were going to go, but I don't know. I mean, if I'm him after Monday night, what must he be thinking right now? I mean, what must he be thinking? Chris Jericho summed it up very well in a tweet the very next morning on Twitter when he said he obviously saw the segment and couldn't understand, you know, with all that talent, basically how these idiots could run that company the way that they do. You know, and Jericho's not a dumb man. He knows of what he speaks. Not a big fan of that segment at all. So that was your show in a nutshell. Those are the main things anyway about Impact that I liked or that I didn't like. Obviously, on the whole, I didn't like it quite as much as I had hoped I would. It's only one night. Impact is already taped for next week. It's an every other week schedule. So 1 week it'll be live. The next week it'll be taped. I don't have the spoilers in front of me. I did peruse them earlier. And if it's possible, on paper, the show sounds even worse than it did this week. But I'm going to flip on Monday night. Sometimes the spoilers can read badly, but on TV the show turns out to be a lot better. I really hope so. Although, and this is a spoiler alert here, I'm going to give a little spoiler about the main event on Impact this week. So if you don't want to hear this, just skip ahead a minute or two. The main event, apparently, of Impact this coming Monday night is a non-title match between Jeff Hardy and AJ Styles that sees Jeff Hardy pin AJ Styles clean in the middle of the ring. I believe Abyss plays a role in this somehow, but essentially it's a clean, I think, pinfall win by Jeff Hardy over the world champion just a couple of days before AJ defends the belt against Abyss at the pay-per-view. Why does this make sense? Does this make sense? Of course it doesn't. But they do these things without thinking. They don't have a plan in mind. They just put these things together. And I think that right there is emblematic of a bigger problem in this company, but what do I know? Let's see what happens. I would be very curious 5 weeks from now to see what the ratings are and what Spike TV is thinking. But so far, I don't like what I see from Impact, and I really hope they clean up their act because God knows it would be great to have a real war on our hands, and right now, this is basically the equivalent. And I love Canada. It's a great country. I've been there a couple of times. I know we have a lot of Canadian listeners. I'm sure a lot of the people from Canada will be the first to say that they are not exactly a country with an army equipped to take on the United States. So this would kind of be like Canada trying to start a fight with the U.S. where one doesn't really exist, and they kind of storm across the border to fight with us, and the U.S. just, you know, wipes them out in 60 seconds flat. You know, that's Canada invading the U.S. That's a great analogy, actually. And that's kind of what TNA and WWE is like at this point. You know, they're picking a fight with the big dog when they don't have a chance because even though they have the tools, they don't know what the fuck to do with them. That's a problem. Now, on the other channel, Raw was actually average at best. I didn't think Raw was a very good show either. It was not a great Monday night for wrestling, even though it should have been. But there was probably more about Raw that I liked. Maybe as much. Maybe I liked about as much about Raw as I did Impact. It's just that the Impact shit irked me more because they had the potential to be so much better. Raw was what it was. It was just another week on the march to WrestleMania. They did all the things they needed to do. But it was just a boring show. It just didn't feel special. It didn't feel like anything big was really happening. You know, Triple H had a promo with Sheamus that was good, but, you know, it was what it was. I don't watch Raw for Triple H promos. Shawn Michaels and The Undertaker had another fantastic segment. That probably was the highlight of Raw for me. No big surprise there. Undertaker stumbled and stammered a little bit at the beginning of his promo, but when Shawn came out and they were jaw-jacking back and forth, I think Undertaker really showed a fire and a passion and an intensity in his promo that you don't usually see in an Undertaker promo. And Shawn Michaels just seemed to have this newfound arrogance and confidence that he's been lacking on TV. You know, he didn't come out with a big sourpuss on his face. He seems to be at peace and at ease with what he has to do at WrestleMania. So, you know, they added the stipulation, no disqualification, no count out. There must be a winner. Streak versus career. The stage has been set. This match has to go on last. It just has to. Although I did see one thing pointed out on a message board. I don't remember which one it was. But it was a valid point that this person brought up. There have been times when the WrestleMania main event, whatever that final match is, has been shortchanged because they're running low on time. Supposedly it happened with Triple H and Randy Orton last year, although I went back. That match was somewhere in the 20-minute range. So I would hate to think that that match was going to be longer than it turned out to be because that match was terrible. It's not the case every year. I guess it may be a concern. But you've got 4 hours. And they do a pretty good job pacing these shows, a hell of a lot better than TNA does. I would be very, very surprised, let's put it that way, if they were going to shortchange the amount of time Shawn Michaels and The Undertaker have for their match. Let's just put it this way. I'm not overly concerned about that. That match deserves to main event the show. It's being positioned, quite frankly, to do so. There are still people emailing me thinking that Edge and Chris Jericho will main event because Edge won the Royal Rumble. He technically is supposed to be in the main event. I don't know what to say to that except that I don't see that happening. But we'll see. I mean, they like to go with the feel-good ending, and you have babyface against babyface, and you can make an argument that either way there's going to be a lot of very disappointed people. If you end the Undertaker streak, which is not going to happen, people will be very upset. If Shawn Michaels loses, as most people feel he will, myself included, you've ended the career of one of the greatest performers in the history of the company. But I think there's a way to manage that where it's not so much a sad ending as it is when you go off the air for WrestleMania this year, Shawn Michaels gets an ovation and a reception and a reaction, the likes that is becoming of somebody of his status. And what a visual it would be to see Shawn Michaels waving to a crowd of 60-something thousand people as he walks to the ring, presumably for the last time, although I don't believe anybody honestly believes that. It's just the right thing to do. So I'm looking forward to that match, in case you couldn't figure that out already. the Bret Hart-Vince McMahon stuff really was not advanced this week. That'll be next week. As I suggested, actually, on a recent podcast, they're doing the contract signing, which I figured they were going to do. I don't know why more people didn't deduce that from TV the last couple of weeks. I mean, I'm not exactly a rocket scientist myself. It just seemed obvious to me that something was going to go down on that Steve Austin show. Stone Cold will guest host Raw this coming Monday night. He'll preside over the contract signing, I would presume. That is when we will find out that Bret Hart's injury is a fraud. Although one person wrote in into the mailbag this week suggesting that what will happen is that Bret is injured in storyline, but that Stone Cold will break Vince McMahon's leg and will basically have two crippled men fighting at WrestleMania. If I wanted to see that, I would watch Impact on Monday nights. I do not see that happening. I'm sure that the cast will come off and Bret Hart will beat the shit out of Vince McMahon, or at least will get Vince's big shocked face when he finds out that Bret really isn't injured. And I don't know if Austin will referee the match at WrestleMania. I mean, if they want Austin on the card, I don't know if he's busy or not. I mean, I could see Stone Cold being appointed or appointing himself as the guest referee after all the games and the chicanery that we saw on Monday night with Vince screwing John Cena in the main event. Maybe Austin says, you know, we're not going to have any of that at the pay-per-view because I'm going to be there to make sure that this match goes straight down the middle the way it should be. I guess we'll find out. And if Austin was on the WrestleMania card, it just makes the card that much more special. So we'll see how that goes. That's next week, though. Of course, Vince had his big match with John Cena, which, by the way, tripled, or something like that, tripled the rating that Impact did. So Hulk Hogan and Ric Flair on TV for the first time in wrestling roles in years, and in their first match against each other in, like, 10 years on television, going back to the WCW days, which actually is not true. Actually, it would have been probably 9 years, because Hulk Hogan and Ric Flair actually had a match on Raw for the Undisputed title in May of 2002. That's still a long time. And to think that that was outdone by Raw, it was outdone by a Vince McMahon-John Cena match, like 4-1, is just remarkable. But it did, and Vince beat Cena And Batista came out, of course, beat the shit out of John Cena, even though he said he wouldn't. But that's what a heel does. He lies. What else? The Orton, Rhodes, DiBiase, Legacy, Days of Our Lives storyline is doing nothing for me. I have no idea where they're going with this. I figured it was going to be a triple threat. Maybe it will be. We've seen them in the ring so many times now, I don't even care about this match. Maybe, you know, Kofi Kingston has no spot on the card right now. I figured what would happen is that somehow they're going to bring Kofi into this storyline where Kofi and Orton are actually aligned as tag team partners against Rhodes and DiBiase. But from what I understand, Money in the Bank may be expanded now to a 10-man Money in the Bank. Drew McIntyre has been added to it, so you have 9 guys right now. And I'm of the impression they're adding one more. So there's still time for Kofi Kingston to be added to Money in the Bank, but if he isn't, he's going to have to find a role on this WrestleMania card, and they may put him in the Orton storyline. So I guess we'll find out where they're going with this on Monday night. No new name announced on Monday for the WWE Hall of Fame, which I found surprising. A number of you emailed me and hit me up on Twitter to tell me, which I actually didn't see because I was flipping over to Impact, in the opening intro for Raw. They apparently have taken Ric Flair out, which you knew they were going to do, and in his place, they put a clip of the Ultimate Warrior. And even Triple H in his promo on Monday night, he didn't mention the Warrior by name, but he kind of talked about how when he first came up in his first WrestleMania, he got crushed by a veteran. Obviously, he was referring to the Ultimate Warrior at WrestleMania 12. It's possible now that the company has reached some sort of a deal, again, with Warrior. They thought they had one before, and the Warrior backed out. Maybe now they've reached a compromise. Maybe Warrior could potentially go into the Hall of Fame this year. You know, he was going to be the centerpiece until he backed out. So they've got 3 more guys to announce on TV, one of which we already know because it was announced, I believe, earlier today. Is it today? In the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, there is a newest inductee into the WWE's celebrity wing of the Hall of Fame. Bob Uecker, Mr. Baseball himself, is going into the Hall of Fame this year. Apparently, they've been trying to induct him now for several years, but he is a broadcaster for the Milwaukee Brewers baseball team, and they just were never able to work it out with his schedule, and now he is able to do it. And I love this induction, actually. Say what you will about this quote-unquote celebrity wing, but if there is a batch of celebrities deserving of going into the Hall of Fame, I would put Bob Uecker in that camp. Now, I don't know how many of you are familiar with him as far as his WrestleMania exploits are concerned, but he appeared at back-to-back WrestleManias, WrestleMania 3 and WrestleMania 4. And he was entertaining both times. In fact, one of the all-time great highlight reel clips from WrestleMania is from WrestleMania 4. Bob Uecker was doing an interview backstage with Andre the Giant, and Andre was, you know, he cut his promo, as bad as it was, and then he started laughing. And Uecker was a little nervous, obviously, being around the Giant. And Andre grabbed him around the throat and shook him like a rag doll. And it was great. Bob Uecker, funny guy. He did this storyline. I think it was at the same WrestleMania show where Vanna White of Wheel of Fortune fame was there. And Bob was trying to find Vanna all night long and just could not find her. It was his mission to find Vanna White, which eventually he did. He's a great guy. He really is. And some of my older WrestleMania memories come from Bob Uecker being at WrestleMania. So him going into the Hall of Fame, I think, is fine. I have no problem with that at all. I'm sure his Hall of Fame speech will be entertaining. I don't know who's going to induct him. We haven't heard that yet. Besides Uecker, to the best of my knowledge, that would leave 2 more spots open. They have 2 more people that they're inducting, one of which is going to be Stu Hart. In fact, we might find out on Monday that Stu Hart is going in. I say that because I don't know when else they would do it. You know, Vince McMahon is the one who basically said, no, I'm not going to let Stu go in. So you've got Steve Austin on Raw Monday. If anybody could force or intimidate Vince McMahon into agreeing to put Stu Hart in the Hall of Fame, it would be Steve Austin. And then after Stu Hart, there's one more name, and I don't know, you know, could that name be the Ultimate Warrior? It's possible. I don't know that for a fact. I guess we'll just have to wait and see. So those are my thoughts on Raw and Impact. You know, obviously I skipped some other things. Those were the main things to me. Neither one of these shows by any means blew me away. Raw was average at best with some really good stuff sprinkled in. Impact felt like an adrenaline rush. you know, to borrow a phrase from their old theme song. But they did so many things wrong that it just makes you shake your head and hope that they can fix whatever it is they need to fix going forward and figure out a way to get those numbers up, because if those numbers stay where they are or continue to go down, that's not going to be good news for TNA. And I know a lot of you are big TNA fans, and you guys are excited about it too, and I would hate to think that, you know, the people who actually loved that show on Monday and want to see TNA, do even better, you know, those people are going to be pretty disappointed too if TNA doesn't change their ways and figure out some way to get people to watch their show. Because obviously whatever they're doing right now is not working. Now, as far as Jeff Hardy is concerned, I forgot to mention this earlier, but this is important to note. I mentioned before, you know, Jeff Hardy being on the roster as long as he doesn't go to jail, and I laughed, but it really is no laughing matter for Jeff Hardy, because his hearing, which has been pushed back now so many different times, is going to be held this Wednesday, March 17th, I believe in North Carolina. He faces a laundry list of very serious felony charges, and if he is convicted on any or all of those charges, he's going to go to jail. You know, he may not serve the maximum sentence and be locked up for 10 years, but he could be going away for a while. You know, and a lot of people think, oh, well, he's going to get off or he's not going to be convicted. You don't know that. You don't know that. Nobody does. And, you know, he can put on a cool, calm, and collected face all he wants to, but I'm sure Jeff and his friends and his family are concerned, as well they should be. Obviously, TNA wasn't all that concerned because they signed him to a contract and they put him in their main event. And, in fact, next week, again, spoiler alert, so skip this if you don't want to hear a spoiler for Monday, but this coming week, he's going to pin their world champion on TV, even though he's not wrestling him at the pay-per-view. So Jeff Hardy could conceivably pin AJ Styles on TV on Monday and then 2 days later find out that he's in a pretty bad way. So let's hope that, Jesus Christ, this wind, my God, I don't know if you can hear that, but it is frightening outside. I think I just saw a cow fly by. Jesus, I didn't know Rosie O'Donnell lived in this neighborhood. Now, before we get to the mailbag here, or before something comes flying through my window and hits me in the head, I mentioned on my Twitter page, twitter.com/Solomonster, the hot place on Twitter, of course. I can't say that I've been a trending topic on Twitter yet, but there's always time for that to happen. I mentioned that I watched WrestleMania 7 in its entirety on WWE Classics On Demand a couple of days ago. Yesterday, actually, a couple of days ago. And it's been a while since I watched WrestleMania 7 from start to finish without fast-forwarding anything. I was a little disappointed because I noticed that they edited out one of the segments. And I'm guessing that, you know, back then the WWF pay-per-view shows had a 5-minute intermission, which they don't have that anymore. Or you know, these days their 5-minute intermission is just showing some commercials for a WWE shop and then doing a couple of really shitty backstage skits. But back then they had an actual intermission and they would put a countdown on the screen and nothing really would happen. Maybe it aired during the intermission, I don't recall, but they had this very bizarre taped segment on WrestleMania 7. Vince McMahon was sitting in the control center. Those of you who used to watch WWF Superstars and stuff, you would see Sean Mooney and, you know, Gene Okerlund doing these updates from the truck. That's basically what it was. Vince McMahon is sitting there, and he is hosting a debate that involves, of all people, George Steinbrenner, the owner of the New York Yankees, and Paul McGuire, who used to play for the San Diego Chargers and the Buffalo Bills, I believe, in the NFL. And this was a debate over instant replay. And it was basically, it had to be scripted. And if it was, it was poorly scripted and some sort of attempted humor. It was not meant to be a serious segment. I have no clue to this day what the purpose of it was. It served no purpose. It just didn't make any sense to me at all. It was like a train wreck, but it was entertaining. And they edited it out of the show. And I can only imagine that it was either so horrible they decided we can't possibly show this, or maybe it aired during the intermission because the intermission was edited out. I don't know. But otherwise, the show seemed to pretty much be intact from start to finish. I figured what I would do here is just give a quick WrestleMania 7 Solomonster synopsis. I may do this from time to time when I watch 24/7. And I figured I would give my, especially in the spirit of WrestleMania season, I would give my thoughts on this classic WrestleMania show from 1991. This was, of course, their Superstars and Stripes Forever. This is when they were blatantly exploiting the Gulf War conflict, which I believe was already over by this time, but Vince McMahon and his infinite stubbornness decided, you know, we have this character in Sergeant Slaughter, the Iraqi sympathizer. We're not going to drop it because the war is over. We're going to see it through until the very end. And so, at least in WWF, the war was still going on, and the war would not be won until Hulk Hogan won the WWF Championship. So the show starts off with Willie Nelson singing the national anthem, which was pretty cool. It was interesting to see Willie Nelson. He looked like a walking NASCAR in that they put so much merchandise on this guy. I could just see him just before walking out there. They strapped so much merchandise and crap on this poor guy, who probably weighs like 100 pounds at most. They got the old toy WWF belt, the Velcro belt wrapped around his waist. He had like a bandana on him and T-shirt and probably had a sticker on his ass. I don't know. He looked ridiculous, but it's Willie Nelson, so that was cool. Hacksaw Jim Duggan came out, much to my chagrin, to do commentary with Gorilla Monsoon. The Rockers, Shawn Michaels, curtain-jerking WrestleMania against The Barbarian and Haku, managed by Bobby Heenan. Thank God Bobby Heenan was managing here, which told me that he'll be back on commentary once his match is over. Thankfully, he was back in the announce booth later on in the show. It was fine for what it was, about a 10-minute tag team match, nothing special. The Rockers won. That's all you really need to know. Second match, Texas Tornado Kerry Von Erich against Dino Bravo. First thing I noticed about this, when Dino Bravo came to the ring, actually he was already in the ring, I think. I don't even think he got an entrance. There were so many matches on this show. This struck me as the show went on, how many matches there were, and I went back when it was over, 14 matches, not including the dark match, which apparently was Coco Beware beating the Brooklyn Brawler. I had to look that up. 14 matches airing on TV. And here I was just talking earlier about how great WWF is at pacing their shows. That is just way too many matches for a pay-per-view. But anyway, Dino Bravo comes out and his face is fucked up. Somebody beat the shit out of Dino Bravo. His face was so swollen, he looked like he had a broken nose. I don't know what the hell happened to this guy. But he looked terrible. And of course, jacked to the gills. Texas Tornado comes out looking high. I don't think I've ever seen a Kerry Von Erich match, at least in WWF, where he didn't look like he was high on drugs. This match was terrible. It literally went 3 minutes long. He put the claw on Bravo, hit him with a tornado punch, pinned him 1-2-3. This was a waste. The British Bulldog against the Warlord, it was about as bad as you would think. Although, I shouldn't say that. It was actually slightly better. The fans really got into the test of strength between the two guys. The Warlord put him in his full Nelson finisher. The Bulldog broke out. Bulldog got him up for a power slam. The place went ape shit. Beat him in about 7 or 8 minutes. So, whatever. It was bad, but it was fine for what it was. And then came the Nasty Boys of TNA fame. Yes, the same Nasty Boys. Against the Hart Foundation for the WWF Tag Team Championship. This, of course, was Bret Hart, the end of Bret Hart's final reign, his second reign as a tag team champion in World Wrestling Entertainment. It was fine. You know, again, nothing special, not on the level of a Hart Foundation Rockers match or a Hart Foundation British Bulldogs match. After all, it is the Nasty Boys. But a lot of intensity in this match. You know, I'm watching Bret Hart, and again, it just reiterates how realistic a wrestler Bret Hart is. He would throw punches. The most elementary of maneuvers would look real. I mean, they would look like Bret was beating the shit out of somebody. I can appreciate that. Unlike, say, somebody like John Cena when he throws a punch. So anyway, Nasty Boys beat the Hart Foundation. I believe it was Jimmy Hart, yes, who threw in his helmet. He had a helmet on. Don't ask me why. Threw the helmet into the ring. They used it as a weapon. 1-2-3, new tag team champions. The Nasty Boys are the definition of transitional champions because it was just a couple of months later at SummerSlam, the very next pay-per-view, that they dropped the belts to the Legion of Doom at Madison Square Garden. So the Hart Foundation come up a little bit short in that match. Then you have Jake the Snake Roberts and Rick the Model Martel in a blindfold match. And they show the incident, the angle that led to this match. It was on an edition of the Brother Love Show. This made me giddy, of course, because this Brother Love Show on Superstars happened to take place on my birthday, October 6th. And Rick Martel, when he was the model, he would walk around with this little, what he called an atomizer. It was his own fragrance that he created. He sprayed the fragrance in Jake Roberts' eyes and blinded him, and that was kind of the genesis of this match. Let's see how you react to being blind. Both guys, blindfolds on their head. Supposedly they can't see a thing. Of course they can see through them. They got the crowd into it. After a while, I felt like it was getting a little old. The crowd was getting a little restless. And just when I was thinking that, Jake grabbed him, DDT'd him. 1, 2, 3, match over. Again, it was fine for what it was. Would I do another blindfold match at a WrestleMania? Probably not anytime soon. Undertaker. You might know him. His very first WrestleMania. One-on-one with Superfly Jimmy Snuka, WWE Hall of Famer. The match went about 5 minutes, if that. Not a good match at all, but significant for obvious reasons. Undertaker begins his, what would become the streak, going 1-0 in his first WrestleMania appearance. And then comes the highlight of WrestleMania 7, the match of the night, without question. Ultimate Warrior is involved in this match, if you could believe it. To this day, I'm pretty sure this is the Warrior's best match. Ironically, I think the Warrior's two best matches came at WrestleMania 6 and 7, respectively. But this was his best, against Macho King Randy Savage. This was a retirement match. The loser would have to leave the World Wrestling Federation forever. Of course, we all know how those stipulations go. But back then, I'm sure there were some people who thought the loser was going to retire. Savage carried him. Warrior did exactly what he had to do. I give him a lot of credit. He fulfilled his role very well. Savage, of course, is great. And you watch old Randy Savage matches. Randy Savage matches. There you go. And any of you who picked up the Macho Madness DVD that came out last year, you watch these old Savage bouts where he's jumping off the top rope onto the arena floor. He would grab his opponent's head in the ring, leap over the top rope, and drape their neck over the rope. He would always land on his knees. And I cringe now watching this, knowing that years later, Savage's knees were just completely shot. And it was because of doing moves like this, move after move after move, night after night after night. But this was a great match. The finish kind of came out of nowhere, but I thought it was fine. The place exploded. Sensational Queen Sherry, who was managing Savage at the time, could not believe it. Warrior poses in the corners, leaves the ring. And what makes this so good is what happened after the match as well. The match itself was great, but the post-match angle sealed the deal. Now, before the match started, Bobby Heenan is sitting at ringside at the announce table, and he somehow, Bobby Heenan is looking, not at a monitor or anything, but he's looking at the far end of the arena. And he must have X-ray vision because he can see Miss Elizabeth, Randy Savage's former manager, sitting in the crowd. It wasn't even like she was in the front row. She is sitting, like, buried in the crowd by the aisleway. But he can see this somehow. Anyway, Elizabeth is at WrestleMania. She is terribly concerned, presumably about her man, her former man, Randy Savage. They have shots of her during the match showing her concerned. This, of course, is to set up what would come after the match. Sherry is incensed that Savage is a loser. He couldn't get the job done. She begins to kick the shit out of the Macho Man. The place is booing. They can't believe it. Elizabeth can take no more. She hops the guardrail, runs down, enters the ring, grabs Sherry by the hair, tosses her to the outside. The place is going nuts. Savage gets up, can't believe that Elizabeth is standing in front of him. He doesn't realize that he was beaten up by Sherry until he sees her on the outside being restrained by referees, screaming and shouting. And now Savage has no idea what to do. He looks to the crowd, can't believe it. Of course, it ends with a warm embrace, a reunion, if you will, between Randy Savage and Elizabeth. And look, I can sit here and lie to you, but I'm not going to do that. Every time I watch this angle, I'm a sap. I cry. I do. I mean, I don't bawl like a fucking baby or anything, but it brings a tear to my eye. I don't know if it's because I know what happened to Elizabeth later on when, you know, with her dying and all that, which kind of gets to me, but this is as well done of an angle as you're ever going to see. You cannot think of another wrestling angle in WWE or any organization in the last 10 or 15 years as good as this, as far as, you know, they tried something with, like, Matt and Lita. It doesn't work. It doesn't work, and in part because Savage and Elizabeth were together for so many years. It's kind of like Ted DiBiase and Virgil, which we'll get to later. They were together. You know, Virgil was DiBiase's bodyguard for a good 4 or 5 years before the split. And when they split, the place went absolutely nuts, And for a little bit of time, Virgil was kind of a big deal. Of course, he fizzled out because nobody gave a shit about him. But you don't see things like that anymore because you don't or you can't invest that same amount of time. I mean, you could if you wanted to, but these people have ADD. You know, if they start an angle on one show, it's over the next week. So this was phenomenal. People in the audience, men and women, were crying. Savage hoists Elizabeth up on his shoulder. They're posing in the ring. This was awesome. This was what made WrestleMania 7 a good... This is the difference between WrestleMania 7 being a shit WrestleMania and being what I would consider to be a good one. By no means was this, you know, the best WrestleMania of all time. Not even close. But this event is significant for two reasons. Undertaker debuting at Mania and the Savage Warrior match. This was awesome. Now, the next match, not so much. You had Demolition, which by now was consisted of Smash and Crush. So Axe, Bill Eady, was already out of the company at this point. And Demolition was on their way out, as was evident by the outcome of this match. Their opponents on this show, Tenryu and Kitao, Jinshiro Tenryu and Koji Kitao, were actually, they were borrowed from the Japanese promotion Super World of Sports, SWS, which... WWF, I think they had some sort of co-promotional agreement with them at the time. They had sent some WWF guys over to Japan. So they were kind of on loan from that Japanese promotion. And Tenryu and Kitao beat Demolition in about what felt like 2 minutes. I mean, it was a very short match. You know, Kitao got his ass handed to him, and then out of nowhere, his team won. Demolition looked like a couple of jobbers. They were gone shortly thereafter from the company. Demolition was, and I don't think Tenryu and Kitao ever made another appearance for WWF again, at least not as a tag team. I could be wrong about that, but this was kind of a one-and-done type of thing. It was just a pointless match. Intercontinental Championship on the line, Mr. Perfect defending against the Big Boss Man. Perfect lost the match on a result, I believe, of a disqualification. But Perfect, the point is Perfect retained the title. Andre the Giant, who was looking really sad by this point. He would get worse later in the year. He didn't have the cane at this point, but he was hunched over, walking very slowly, looking almost sickly, coming down to the ring in a button-down shirt. He came down to interfere and kind of celebrated with the Big Boss Man after the match. This would be Andre the Giant's final appearance at a WrestleMania. He, of course, would pass away in January of 1993. Earthquake defeats Greg the Hammer Valentine. Very quick match, meant nothing. Legion of Doom defeats Power and Glory literally in about 30 seconds. Again, another pointless match, but I guess you got to get LOD on the card somehow. Virgil against Ted DiBiase. This was their first match coming off Virgil turning on DiBiase finally after so many years. This happened at the Royal Rumble. So this is their first singles match, and Roddy Piper had kind of taken Virgil under his wing as a mentor. Almost like an NXT type of situation. I'm guessing the reason they did this was they wanted to take Piper, who probably wasn't doing anything at the time, and give Virgil some rub and make him feel important. Or maybe they were planning on kind of segueing this into a Piper DiBiase feud, which never really happened. But Piper was there. He had just been in a motorcycle accident. Now, I don't know if that was gimmicked or not. They may have just been working that. I don't see a reason to do that. But he came down to the ring on a crutch. So maybe they just faked it to add some emotion to this, or maybe he did get hurt. I don't know. He came out on crutches, though, and sat at ringside for this match. Virgil won by countout. Piper got pushed down by DiBiase a couple of times. After the match, DiBiase just savaged him with that crutch. Beat him up, kicked the injured leg. Sherry came out. This was after earlier in the night when Sherry had turned on Savage, and people figured, well, Sherry's gone. She's got to leave with Macho Man. Not the case. Sherry aligned with DiBiase, came back out later in the night. So that's pretty much what this was. The real significant match between Virgil and DiBiase was actually at SummerSlam a couple months later, and that was when Virgil won the $1 million belt. The only time, by the way, that belt actually changed hands. The Mountie, and by this point, when the Mountie came out, I figured, you've got to be kidding me. Like, there's still more matches before the main event. Are you kidding me? This match was the point in the show when I went, okay, you've got to have a limit to how many matches you can have at WrestleMania. So Mountie comes out, has a match with Tito Santana, literally beats him in a minute. Again, he hit him with the shock stick, pinned him. There was no purpose to this match. except to just get these guys on the show. And quite frankly, you could have accomplished this by doing what you had done at WrestleMania a couple of years earlier by just having a battle royal at the beginning of the show. I don't know why they didn't do that. Main event, Hulk Hogan against Sergeant Slaughter for the WWF Championship, the U.S. against Iraq. Part one, of course. This would happen again many years later. And Hogan bleeds a gusher in this match, which adds a little something to this match. Beats Slaughter to nobody's surprise in about 20 minutes. Wins his third WWE Championship belt. Celebrates posing, going off the air with the American flag. A feel-good moment for all the Americans out there and all the little Hulkamaniacs, including myself at home. And that's WrestleMania 7 for you right there. Again, not a great WrestleMania, but to me, significant because of the Warrior Savage match and because it was The Undertaker's debut at this show, and obviously he has become a phenom in large part because of his accomplishments at this event over the last, 20 years. So, it's interesting, this show took place in Los Angeles. You know, the story behind it, originally the show was booked for the Los Angeles Memorial Coliseum. And they were going to try to get 100,000 people packed into that Coliseum. And WWE tells the story that the Sergeant Slaughter angle got so heated that they got bomb threats in advance of the show. And so they had to change the venue from the 100,000-seat Coliseum to the 20,000-seat sports arena. They could tell that story all they want to. The fact is, they could not sell tickets worth a damn. And there was no chance in hell that they were going to fill the Los Angeles Memorial Coliseum, and they knew that. So they came up with that as a cover story, and they changed it to the sports arena. Whatever. You know, if that's the story they want to tell, whatever makes them feel better. There were a lot of celebrities on this show. And I wanted to bring this up because it struck me earlier in the night, they had a backstage segment where Gene Okerlund was interviewing many of the celebrity guests that were on hand. Regis Philbin, Alex Trebek, Marla Maples, who of course was one of the many wives of Donald Trump, who also was there. This was Donald Trump's third WrestleMania. He, of course, literally hosted WrestleManias 4 and 5 from Trump Plaza in Atlantic City, New Jersey. And WrestleMania 7, he was out in Los Angeles, front and center for the show. Not the entire show, but the key matches. He came out and was sitting in the front row for them. They interviewed him later in the night. They also interviewed Lou Ferrigno, the Incredible Hulk, Henry Winkler, the Fonz, or some of you may know him better as the principal who got killed in the very first Scream movie. forgot his name in that movie. And Chuck Norris. Yes, the legendary Chuck Norris at WrestleMania 7. Macaulay Culkin, by the way, of Home Alone fame was in the crowd, but it was funny because he wasn't there as a guest. Just randomly before one of the matches, the cameraman got a shot of the crowd, and Macaulay Culkin was just sitting in the audience, like standing up on his chair. And they never mentioned him by name. They had like a Home Alone joke. And then they never acknowledged him again. So it was kind of, I don't know if they just picked up on him in the crowd and they said, hey, let's put him on camera. But he was kind of a big deal at that time because this was just after the Home Alone movie had come out. And yeah, he was there too. So what's interesting, though, is that when they had that segment originally with Philbin, Trebek, and Marla Maples backstage, they were referred to as your guest hosts for WrestleMania. So the guest host concept actually was kind of born in terms of referring to these people as guest hosts at WrestleMania 7. I just thought it was funny, given that we are currently in the era of the Raw guest host, that I would be sitting here watching WrestleMania 7 referring to these people as guest hosts. So anyway, and then, by the way, they did a far better job with these people on this show than WWE does on most weeks with their guest hosts now. Yes, I was not a big fan of Chris Angel, you can tell. So, that's WrestleMania 7 for you. If you're not a subscriber to WWE 24/7, if you actually have it available to you on your cable service, I think it's well worth it. I know in my area, it's about $6 or $7 a month. You get about 20 hours of rotating content each month. Some of it's good, some of it's not so good, some of it's great, especially the Legends roundtables when they actually update them. So, big thumbs up on that. We'll see what the next big pay-per-view is. Maybe I'll do another one of these reviews in the future. So hopefully you enjoyed it. All right, so we have a little bit of time left here through this scary storm that is erupting outside my window here. This is just frightening. I feel like my window is going to blow in at any second. things I do for this podcast. Let's get to some of your feedback here, because there's way too many letters to just ignore this week. Some comments here. James writes in, "Dear Solomonster, I am one of those fans you talked about last week on the show that has not watched much wrestling of late, until January, that is. I only watched Raw once since WrestleMania 25 and have not watched SmackDown since 2006. Wow. I've given up on TNA, and I'm only loyal to Raw and catch the occasional Ring of Honor show on HDNet. But due to your podcast, I feel like I know all about TNA and SmackDown, so thank you." Well, you're welcome. Craig in Texas writes in, "Dear Solomonster, you mentioned Harvey Whippleman is the only man to manage a woman wrestler on TV. This brought back distant memories of a manager from WCW named Sonny Ono. I believe he managed Akira Hokuto in WCW. Not only Akira, but I've heard that he also managed Malia Hosaka. Just thought I would throw that out there. Of course I remember Sonny Ono, but I did not remember him managing any females. I'm sure it's possible. If it is, there you go. Now you know." By the way, I referred to a letter I got earlier from somebody who thinks that what's going to happen on Monday night is Stone Cold will break Vince McMahon's leg, and Bret and Vince will have a quote-unquote handicap match at WrestleMania. I just want to give credit where credit is due. That came from Jamie from Niagara Falls. I don't think that's going to happen, but if it does, now you know that you can thank Jamie for the wonderful idea. Rob writes in, "Dear Solomonster, in answer to one of your questions from episode 102, I'm a loyal listener who does not watch Raw at all, unless you happen to mention a segment that really impressed you, at which point I'll look it up on YouTube. I myself don't have cable TV, and so I couldn't watch Raw even if I wanted to. Regardless, it beats having to sit and endure watching 120 minutes of crap, so I want to thank you for providing this additional invaluable service and sacrifice of watching Raw in its entirety and mentioning the good bits on your show for those of us who have highly narrow attention spans. Well, again, Lord knows there's been plenty of bad to go with the good, but I aim to please. So there you go. Got a great letter here from Night Owl. "Dear Solomonster, I'd just like to say I've been listening to your show since the days when Kane was carrying the bag. You're the first podcast I listen to, and I have your audio updated on my iPod automatically, so I can't get the shows even if I forget to grab them. With 59 minutes left before Raw and just getting done with Podcast 102, I've been thinking about wrestling, and if you could run WWE for 1 month, and the next pay-per-view was WrestleMania, and you had the powers to bring dead people back to life, what would the main event be for the WWE Championship at WrestleMania?" Yeah, there's a lot of different possibilities, but in all honesty, the first match that popped into my head is a match that we were supposed to get for WrestleMania 22 back in 2006, and we never did because Eddie Guerrero unfortunately passed away in November. But what I would love to see would have been a Eddie Guerrero-Shawn Michaels match, either for the championship or not, at WrestleMania. You know, Shawn Michaels can pull a good match out of just about anybody, except the Great Khali. That match he had with Khali on Raw way back when was not good. But imagine a Shawn Michaels-Eddie Guerrero match on the biggest stage of them all. The expectations that people would have for that match, maybe they wouldn't meet them, but they would have a damn good match trying. And that's a match that we could have seen that unfortunately we never had the chance to. And that's really a shame. But that's one match that would come to mind. I'd have to think a little bit more. I'm sure I could come up with a couple of more. The Shockmaster writes in, "Solomonster, Rob Van Dam's TNA debut was the worst wrestling debut I have ever seen." Very succinct email. I like them when they're short. Can't disagree with you there. I don't know about worst of all time. Maybe it is. I'd have to give that a little more thought. Worst debut in TNA history, maybe more accurate. Yes, I would say it probably was. Mark from Portugal wrote in with a whole laundry list of questions, one of which, I'm so proud of myself for remembering this, that I had to mention his question. As random as it was, he says, "Vince McMahon, a couple weeks back on Raw, was backing away from Bret Hart and screamed out, 'You deserve to be screwed.' That reminded me of another similar time he was squirming away from somebody screaming, 'You don't have it anymore.' Do you know the moment that I am thinking back to?" And I actually did know the moment that he was thinking back to, which I couldn't believe, but I kept saying it over and over in my head in Vince McMahon's voice, you don't have it anymore. And then it hit me. It was the Breakdown pay-per-view in September of 1998. This was the show where Undertaker and Kane were in a triple threat match with Stone Cold Steve Austin. and they simultaneously chokeslammed and pinned him. And this was for the championship. Vince McMahon came out and took possession of Austin's smoking skull belt and ran off with it because Austin had lost the title. Austin chased him backstage, caught up to him eventually. Vince was just about to get in his limo. And before doing so, he shouts over at Austin, "You don't have it anymore. It's mine." This, of course, is in reference to the championship belt. And then he proceeds to flip Steve Austin off before being driven away, and they went off the air. So I'm pretty sure that's what you're referring to. That's one of those classic Austin McMahon moments. So when you mention that, it triggered a memory in my brain. So, it's just one of those things that stays with you that you don't forget. Kind of like the time on Raw back in 98 when this would have actually been about a month before this, when Austin, or rather McMahon, was standing in the ring and he decided to, and this is obviously back in the day when Raw was more non-PG than they are now. This is a taped Raw, by the way. This is one that they had tennis on USA, so Raw was airing on a Friday night. And Vince McMahon is standing in the middle of the ring and he proceeds to call Undertaker and Kane they've been reduced to nothing more than two putrid pussies. Yes, Vince McMahon called Undertaker and Kane two putrid pussies. There's something you will not hear on Raw these days. No, you will not. Luis writes in, with WrestleMania being in Hotlanta next year, do you think that Goldberg will main event the Hall of Fame class of 2011? I don't know if Goldberg will, but WWE is actually, this is interesting, I got this little bit of nugget, this little nugget here from actually the Wrestling Observer newsletter that was just published. It's no secret that with WrestleMania being in Atlanta next year, WWE is looking to potentially have some sort of NWA / WCW theme to their Hall of Fame class next year. And they're actively trying to pursue Goldberg, some sort of agreement. They know he's not going to come in and wrestle and perform for them, and Goldberg has no love lost for WWE. But they're trying to figure out a way to approach him to reach some sort of deal where he can sign maybe like a Legends contract. They can, you know, create action figures from Mattel, maybe get Goldberg as a character in their next video game. Part of that would be to potentially get Goldberg into the Hall of Fame next year. So they actually are thinking about it. Would Goldberg accept? I'm sure if the money was right, Goldberg would accept. Ultimate Warrior may well have already accepted, and he certainly has had his share of bad blood with Vince McMahon over the years, so if the Warrior could do it, I think there's certainly a decent chance that Goldberg might do it, but we're still a year away from that even happening, so it's kind of pointless to talk about it right now anyway. All right, we've got, let's see, a couple more here. Sean from Bethlehem writes in, Bethlehem, PA, that is, not the Holy City, although some people might think it is, but I certainly don't. Here's Solomon, sir. Thanks for the sound off. Love the job that you do. Hoping that you can help me understand the Nielsen TV ratings a little bit better. With the new Monday Night War upon us, ratings have become more relevant to me. I watch one show live and I DVR the other. I'm one of the people who likes to think that my viewership really does tip the scales one way or another, even though deep down I know it won't. If I like the direction one promotion is going in, I'd like to reward them with my viewership. Basically, I'm asking, does a DVR recording count as much as viewing live? It depends how you ask the question. If your question is, does DVR count to people as much as live viewership, the answer is no. Because people, like the promoters, the next day when the ratings come out, that's the number they look at. That's the number to them that means the most. Psychologically, that means a lot more to them than adding in DVR viewership. Now, does your viewership count? Absolutely. Typically, I don't remember what the number is. I don't know how much higher the average Impact rating goes up when you factor in DVR viewership. I think it might be something like 8% or something like that. So, for example, Impact did, let's round it up and say Impact did a 1.0 rating this past week, which is what it did. When they factor in DVR viewership, if they go up what they would normally go up on average, and we don't know how much they're going to go up yet because it's a brand new night, anything can happen. There's a pretty good chance that Impact's rating may go up from a 1.0 to maybe like a 1.15 or something like that. So it can make a difference. if the shows were a lot closer, like WWF and WCW used to be, it would mean a lot more. When Raw is doing a 3-5 every week, and Impact is doing a 1, in the grand scheme of things, it really doesn't mean jack shit. So if you're, you know, your viewership is being counted, but is it really going to mean all that much when the gap between the two shows is so great? Probably not. Probably not. But I think your basic premise is quite noble in that you want to reward the promotion that puts on the best show each week. And I think that's perfectly acceptable. I wish that more people would tune out when they're watching a shit show and tune in more often when the show is consistently good. I think that there's something to be said for that. DVR is an interesting thing. Let's put it this way. The DVR numbers don't make as much of an impact, no pun intended, as some people think, especially with wrestling. And nobody can really figure out why that is. The DVR numbers, I think for SmackDown, for example, or even Raw, the DVR numbers are something like 3% or something really minuscule. The basic point is most people are watching Raw live or they're not watching it at all. The DVR numbers are very, very small. And for Impact, I would imagine it probably works the same way. The numbers are a little bit higher, but it's not anything overly significant. Tyler writes in, "Dear Solemn Monster, besides last year's Undertaker Shawn Michaels match, what is your favorite and least favorite Undertaker matches at WrestleMania?" Tyler's least favorite one is Undertaker against Giant Gonzalez at WrestleMania 9. His favorite Undertaker match is against Kane from WrestleMania 14. Well, my least favorite WrestleMania match for The Undertaker, I won't say that I liked the Giant Gonzalez match. There's something about that show from Caesar's Palace that I like. Don't know what it is. It was obviously a horrible match, but it's not my least favorite Undertaker match. My least favorite Undertaker WrestleMania match is WrestleMania 19, which was actually going to be a tag team match with Undertaker and Heidenreich, who was his protege at the time, or rather, I'm sorry, Undertaker and Nathan Jones, against A-Train and The Big Show. And Nathan Jones was so ungodly horrible, they didn't trust him to go out there and have a match. So it turned into a handicap match. Undertaker against A-Train and Big Show. First of all, I'm not a big fan of handicap matches. And by this time, the Undertaker's streak was already being played up. And to me, to put Undertaker in a match like that is completely counterproductive. It serves no purpose. It is a fucking waste of time. It is a waste of the streak storyline. Nobody could have possibly thought Undertaker was going to lose that match. And even if he did, then there would be an argument, well, does it count against his streak? It wasn't a singles match. Does it count? Just a stupid, stupid match to put The Undertaker in. It drew no money at all. Nobody cared. Nobody could possibly care about that match. It was probably his most wasteful WrestleMania match, and that includes the Giant Gonzalez match, as far as I'm concerned. Now, my favorite Undertaker match, aside from last year's match, would probably be Undertaker and Triple H from WrestleMania 17. I thought that was probably their best match that they've ever had. I know their worst match came at the King of the Ring the following year. That was a horrible match. But Undertaker Triple H had a really good match. For an undercard match with no titles or anything like that, they had a really, really good match at WrestleMania in 2001. One of the many matches that helped make that show one of the greatest, if not the greatest, Mania of all time. So that would be my list. Ludeboy writes in, he thought that Darren Young of NXT was actually John Cena in a wig coated in tanning cream playing a joke on CM Punk. Maybe he is. All right, and lastly here, this is a great letter that I got. One of those emails I like getting every now and then from people that listen to this show. It's come from Wilfred in San Juan, Puerto Rico. Writes in with some WrestleMania memories and some other interesting tidbits here. It's your Solemn Monster. I've been listening to your podcast since episode 15. It's the best wrestling show on the web right now. I've been to every WrestleMania since WrestleMania 20, but it was at WrestleMania 23 that I had the best experience of my life beyond any WrestleMania travel package can offer. I was with my ex-girlfriend in our second WrestleMania trip, and she had a knee injury and was in a wheelchair. On the day of the event, we entered Ford Field and asked how were we going to get to the lower level to our seats. Since his girlfriend was in a wheelchair, it was going to be a little difficult. Staff members showed us how to get to an elevator to get us down to the lower level. We went. The door opened, and we were in shock to see that we were backstage with all the wrestlers and WWE staff getting ready for the big event. We talked and took pictures with every top person in the company since they figured my girlfriend was another handicapped person backstage. Shouldn't be laughing. They were very nice to us and took us to ringside with a lot of other handicapped people. We're seated. We enjoyed the show better than we had ever anticipated, and after the show was over, we went backstage again and saw John Cena exhausted from his main event match with Shawn Michaels, and we congratulated him, and he was very nice to us. Since that day, I knew I had to be a part of the wrestling business, and I went to Carlos Colon later that year and asked for a job as a graphic designer for his company, the World Wrestling Council, down in Puerto Rico, since I know that one day he can put a good word in for me if I ever wanted to work for WWE. Carlos gave me the job, and I've been doing the poster artwork for the World Wrestling Council ever since. My work has improved over the last 2.5 years. Last month, I showed my work to WWE Spanish announcer Hugo Savinovich, and he liked my work. And now I'm going to this year's WrestleMania with Carlos Colon to show my work to the people of World Wrestling Entertainment. Thanks for the opportunity to share my WrestleMania memories. Keep up the good work, Wilfred. That's an awesome letter right there. And he actually attached not only some of his artwork, which I told him in a direct email is really good. I mean, his artwork is really good. He attached some of the photos he took backstage with people at WrestleMania. So he's got a picture here of him with Steve Austin, him with Triple H, him with Vince McMahon, who still had hair just hours before Vince would have his head shaved. His head would never look the same again. Really, really cool stuff. And, you know, I always enjoy hearing from people like that who were fans of the show. In this case, he's been listening since episode 15, so he's one of the hardcores. But I always like getting letters from you guys when you write in and tell me your experiences like that and how long you've been listening to the show. And anyway, good luck, Wilfred. I'm sure he'll be writing in with his WrestleMania experiences in a couple of weeks, and hopefully I'll be able to share them here on the podcast. Good luck with that. And for the rest of you, if you want to write in, thesolomonster@gmail.com is the email address, as always, thesolomonster@gmail.com. Follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/solomonster. Now that I have my new laptop here, I don't know if I mentioned this earlier, I already forgot, but I'm working on a new laptop computer. It came early. Everything seems to be good. By the way, it's worth mentioning that this is the first sound off I'm recording on this new machine. I've had some issues getting the software set up. It's not letting me convert and do things I would do before. So I'm hoping that the sound is at least as good as it was before and not worse. So if you can just do me a favor, write in and let me know how the podcast sounds this week, if it sounds any different, if it sounds better, if it sounds worse. Let me know so I'll know if I have to improve it going forward. I'm working on getting a new microphone for the popping and all that, but I'm just talking about the overall quality of what you're hearing right now. If it sounds weird, if it sounds different, that would be why. It's because I'm recording it on a brand new computer, on a laptop as opposed to a desktop, and some of the tools that I used to use are not. I'm using the same program, but for some reason it's not letting me do some of the same things. So you'll write in, let me know, and hopefully we're all good to go going forward. Raw this Monday night, going to crush Impact. I mean, Impact is probably going to go down. I hope it's not by that much, because, like I said, I don't want to see them fail, but there can be no doubt that Raw will just obliterate Impact this week. Impact is a taped show with nothing promoted. They promoted nothing for this week's show and last week's show. WWE, on the other hand, promoted Stone Cold Steve Austin's return as guest host, a Bret Hart Vince McMahon contract signing, and 3 WrestleMania main event matches, rematches from events past. Now, granted, I do not need to see Big Show and John Cena. I do not need to see Triple H and Randy Orton. But we get those 2 matches, and we get what may well be the last ever Shawn Michaels-Chris Jericho match. So that's a pretty big Raw that we've got in store this Monday night. It's going to be a big show. So maybe if I've got the old laptop, I could bring it downstairs. Maybe I'll do some live blogging on my Twitter page during the show. If that's not reason enough to follow me on there, I don't know what is. So anyway, do enjoy Raw. Enjoy Impact. Hopefully we'll be back here, episode 104, next weekend if I don't get blown away by this ridiculous storm on the East Coast. It's horrible outside. It feels like a hurricane right now is just pummeling New York City. So pretty bad stuff. But I know that if I were you, I'd be sitting at home indoors, safe and sound, listening to the Sound Off right now with my headphones on. So on that note, Take it easy, guys. Be well. Stay safe as always. Be back here. Hit you up with 104 right here next week on SEScoops.com.
You've been listening to The Sama Monster.
You know, I really just don't understand what they're doing.
Anybody agree with me out there?
I mean, anybody. Come on, throw me a bone here.
Probably the single dumbest thing I've ever seen in my entire life.
God, I love this business.
On SE Scoops.